The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
Everybody needs to stay home. That's the message from Chief Medical Officer Tony Holohan as the country wakes up this morning to its second national lockdown, with restrictions on travel, social interaction, certain businesses closing their doors for the coming weeks. To talk about all of this, we're joined now by the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, the question of what good this will do, because I think it's generally accepted, not just in Ireland, but elsewhere. In the UK, we can see it. In the United States, we can see it, that the spreaders are those between the ages of 19 and 25. And they are the people with least restriction on them. The colleges are open. The schools are open. Inter-county sport is allowed to continue.
Well, the spreaders at the moment are all of us, and what the Chief Medical Officer has said.
The analysis seems to indicate that the 19 to 25 cohort, who may well be asymptomatic, are the big spreaders.
What the analysis shows, if you look back week by week, is certainly it's within the data we look at, it's 19 to 24-year-olds is where it took hold. But actually, if you look across right across the age groups now, there are much higher rates across the age groups. And obviously, what we're trying, one of the many things we're trying to do, is to keep the rate as low as possible in older age groups and with other vulnerable people. So where you're immunocompromised or you have an underlying condition. So the Chief Medical Officer, just this morning, his message to me was, we were talking about contact tracing, and he said, look, really right now for the next 6 weeks, we all need to act like we are a close contact, because we've got 6 weeks. This is a preemptive strike, Pat. We've got to flatten the curve now again. We've 6 weeks because we want to open up the country for December. I say it's preemptive because the things that we watch in terms of government priorities around human health, health services, education services, and the economy, none of them were flashing red, but unfortunately the cases are rising exponentially. So fatalities per day, for example, has doubled in the last two weeks. So it's a preemptive strike. And if I could just say, the main message I'd like to get out this morning, Pat, if I may, is that in one really important way, this is like the last time, because the core message is stay at home. There are exceptions for that, but that is the core message, just like last time, is we've got to flatten the curves, so we've got to stay at home. It's different to the last time in some important ways, some of which you've mentioned. So healthcare services, childcare, school, colleges, manufacturing, construction, disability day services, sports training for school-aged children, they all stay open. These support bubbles are in place, which is something I was pushing hard for. I think it's very important for single adult households. There's an eviction ban in place, and there's far more support in place for nursing homes. And of course, there are the economic supports as well.
That's wonderful. But let's address the particular issue, which is colleges still open. They are locations for super spreading. For example, if you take Kenmare, all summer long they had staycationers coming and going. No cases. Now they have 18 cases, all linked to attendance at UCC. There's no doubt that when you have people staying in accommodation, perhaps sharing a house, four or five people in one house, they might be a bubble during the week. They are going to their own different bubbles, whether it's the boyfriend, the girlfriend, the family at home at the weekends, and then they return. I mean, can you not see that this is highly dangerous?
I can, I agree fully with what you're saying. It's important we don't single out any groups, but that example is a real example. So as of midnight last night, I signed the regulations in at close to midnight last night. None of those things can now happen. So if you have five students living together, that is not a single adult household. So they can't form bubbles with others. Now, if there is a single adult household, that person could form a bubble with them. But those five, they don't get to form five separate bubbles. That's not how it works.
So they have to stay.
They cannot go home.
They have to stay in their accommodation. They cannot go home at the weekend.
The law for them is the same as the law for everybody else, which is stay at home. That is, their home is where they are living for college.
So they cannot return to their families. Just to clarify, they cannot return to their families at the weekend.
They cannot return to the families unless it is for one of the reasons given. So, for example, if a student has an elderly relative, say an elderly mum or dad who's at home and who needs help, who genuinely needs help and they need to go home and they need to help them at the weekend, that's absolutely fine. Hmm. But if it's just for a visit home, that for the next 6 weeks, that is not allowed.
Okay, so they stay put. Now, schools, you know, it's regarded that young children particularly are not likely to spread it, whatever about their biology. We've spoken to Professor Luke O'Neill about that many times. But once you turn 15, 16, you're effectively an adult and you're likely to contract it, maybe asymptomatically, but spread it just like anybody else. In the schools, we've seen the classic exponential rise from, what is it, 12 to 25 to 49, doubling every week. So it means that next week there'll be 100, the following week there'll be 200 schools, the following week there'll be 400 schools. That's the logic of an exponential rise. What are you doing about schools? Because I see them, and it's not just anecdotal, because I can testify with my own eyes. In my area, in Dalkey, in Ballybrack, in Killiney and so on, you see kids, adult kids effectively, fifth years, sixth years, going home in clusters, no masks, not one in sight.
So schools have been one of the real success stories of this, largely down to the work of the principals, the teachers, and to the pupils, because they've had to go through a lot. So here's where we're at right now, Pat. 90% of schools have had no engagement with public health. The other 1 in 10 that has, where mass testing has been conducted, the positivity rate, which is the number of positive cases, is 2.8%. It is roughly the same, the last data I looked at, between primary and secondary schools. Now, here's the really important bit. It's 2.8% positivity in schools, and it's nearly 3 times that amount in the community. So what the public health officials are saying is that the rise in cases in schools is not due to what's happening in the schools. In fact, it's lower, much lower in the schools. It's because the virus is rising exponentially in the community. So it's been a very, very positive story, and the strong and unambiguous advice I have from NPHET, from the public health officials, and from the educators, is to keep the schools open. We have mounting evidence of the educational, social, psychological damage done to children. The last time, I don't criticise that it was a recommendation of NPHET, the government followed it. It's not a criticism of the decision to close the schools. And particularly past schools in lower income areas, I talk to teachers who are saying the impact of the last lockdown on the kids that they teach has been immense. It's really important the schools stay open. And the evidence that I have from public health and from the Department of Education is that the positivity rates are several times lower in the schools than in the community, and that's really important.
Okay. But don't you all, when you meet in the cabinet room, have to blame yourselves? I mean, you've been behind the curve all the time. You know, from March onwards, on this program, we were advocating masks. The WHO came out and said masks were a pretty essential tool. This government didn't get it together until July to suggest masks for public transport and August for retail. And now we are talking about fines long after the UK, long after Australia, long after even Northern Ireland brought in fines. Not to have mass fines of people, but to target the offenders and to give some sort of stick allied to the carrot, which clearly for certain cohorts has not worked.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So in terms of has Ireland been behind the curve, if you look at what every country has done in Europe, what you will find is actually that Ireland has been the first mover in almost every case. Now, we can look at individual measures like masks on buses or whatever you want, but if you look at the total approach taken, actually what the information shows unambiguously, Pat, is that Ireland has moved first and has moved most comprehensively. And that is again what we are doing this morning.
Come on,
we
are if you want to clap yourself on the back for this, you have to ask, well, then why are we in the trouble we're in? Why are we in a second lockdown if we did everything right the first time?
I doubt we did everything right first time, and I doubt any country has done everything right. And I'm really not trying to clap anyone on the back. These are very, very sobering decisions that are being made with a very, very heavy heart. All I'm saying is, in response to the question, has Ireland been a laggard? All I'm saying is, if you look, the data shows unambiguously that we have been a first mover, and that's what we're doing again. I can assure you, there's nobody clapping anyone on the back. I am very aware, and government is very aware of the huge impacts of what we're.
Can you clarify what happens to travellers when they come in and who is allowed to come in? We know cross-border traffic can be discouraged but cannot be stopped. What about people flying in? What happens to them? Are they locked up in hotels for a week?
No, the advice, I spoke some time ago to Mike Ryan in the WHO about exactly this and sought their advice on what to do. And what he said to me was that this idea of quarantine hotels, the international evidence shows you need to be very careful. And he pointed me to one or two examples where the quarantine hotels themselves had become major vectors for the disease. So what we're doing is we're aligning with the EU Commission proposal. So what that is, it was agreed last week in Brussels, is a traffic light system. So countries are green or orange or red.
Yeah.
Ireland now, as with most of Europe, is red. And the proposal is as follows. If you're coming in from a green country, which is a prevalence rate of less than 25 yeah. and a positivity rate of less than 4%, there are no restrictions. You can come and go.
Okay, and we all get that. We've talked about it. No, Minister, we've heard this. We know what this is all about. What happens currently? There are flights coming in, probably, I don't know, Dublin Airport, maybe a couple of thousand people a day. What's happening to them?
There's very few people coming in. I think we're at less than 5% of travel at the moment. So at the moment, the existing regime is still in place, and that's that anybody coming in needs to self-isolate for 2 weeks. But I know, and you know, and all your listeners know, that people are not doing that. So I don't believe that it would have been sufficient for us to say that's the system, and in theory that works, because if you restrict your movements for 2 weeks, that's very safe in terms of not spreading the disease. We all know that people are not restricting their movements, which is why we engaged with the EU, and it's why we're moving to the European Commission model. And can I just say, I appreciate you and I have discussed the detail before, but there is a new piece which was agreed by government at Cabinet on Tuesday, and it is an important one, which is for travellers coming in from red countries. Now, we're red at the moment, and most of Europe is red. They have to self-isolate for 5 days and then take a PCR test. So that does provide a good level of security, which currently we just don't have, Pat.
Now, the intercounty sports can continue, and I presume that means the National League and also the Championship. We're different, though, in this country, because our most popular sports are amateur sports. Unlike in Britain, the Premier League, the rugby and so on, where you can keep teams in bubbles, we can't do that. So therefore, you're going to have people who are going into their jobs, in offices, in factories, whatever, every day, mixing with families and being involved in these sports. Where's the logic there? I understand the psychological advantage of people being able to watch that particular sport, the selection of GA sports, but it's not the same as professional sport.
The recommendation came from NPHET. So in the chief medical officer's letter to me on last Thursday evening, which was seeking a level 5 move, it specified these, and they sought to keep professional and elite sports for the reasons you've given. They're professional, they're well organised, the athletes can be isolated, and the safety protocols are very, very tight. They also recommended keeping the inter-county matches.
They're not at the level of the professional sport you're talking about. They're not living in bubbles. They're mixing with family, friends and workmates.
They're not by definition, they're not professional. They are amateur sports, but certainly the level of organization I think would be akin to professional sports. But what we have done is we have stopped the club championships, because what we had was mounting evidence that not the matches themselves, but activities before the matches, and most importantly, activities and celebrations after the matches, particularly going to pubs, things that shouldn't have been happening, that unfortunately that was happening and was a serious a source of infection. I'm not singling out any single sports organisation, by the way. But for that reason, the lower level championships have been stopped.
Well, you see, I don't know why you don't single out the GAA, because they singled you out. They demanded a logic, the science, if you like, behind any kind of ban on their sports. They came into the committee and said so. So, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Why don't you have a go at them and saying they were irresponsible? The leadership from the top allowed the scandalous pictures that we saw on social media and ultimately on television.
The GAA did demand the evidence. You're absolutely right, and we provided them with the evidence. And there was a meeting, for example, with myself, Catherine Martin, Minister Martin, the acting chief medical officer at the time, and we went through it in detail. And the public health view at the time, which is the public health view today, is that it's not the players, it's not what's happening on the pitch. There are good safety protocols in place there. It's what happens before the match and after the match. And unfortunately, that has come true. So unfortunately, that has come to bear, and the public health officials were right. I don't think it's useful, Pat, to pick out any individual organisation. The reality is, on the ground, you've got mums and dads, men and women, you know, given so much time to try and keep kids safe and keep them healthy and keep them engaged in sport. And I'm very cognizant of that. I think what happened is a serious lapse of judgment that had serious effects. But I don't think it's fair to point to the huge numbers of men and women all over the country who do huge work for all of the different sports clubs. These were the acts of individuals who made conscious decisions, not as members of any organization, but as individuals, to go off and disregard the rules, and the consequences in some cases have been very serious.
Now, some of the queries coming in: disappointed that the golf clubs have been closed. Where's the logic? Utterly crazy. A golf course is a park. Parks are open. What's the evidence that there are outbreaks in golf clubs? They've been meticulous in their observation of COVID rules. How is tennis allowed to go ahead and golf isn't? Minimal contact points in tennis. No contact points at all in golf. Nothing but political games. Both tennis and golf are safe recreational activities, but there's no debate that golf is even much safer. I'm confused and disappointed. Lots of people wondering, what's the logic in all of that? Closing, you know, talking about the mental health of older people. During the week, retirees occupy much of the golf courses. They wander around the golf course in two balls or three balls or four balls or whatever, rarely get to talk to each other, always in the open air. What's the logic there?
Yeah, and people have done a lot, and the golf clubs have done a lot, including even rules around taking out the flags and all of these things. And it is hard. It is very hard, and I wouldn't blame anyone for asking these questions. What's your logic?
You gave the GAA science. Now give us the science on golf.
Well, on the GAA, what I said is we are following the public health advice, and on sports we are following the public health advice as well. Is that there is this is the public health advice. What we did include was training for sports age children, non-contact in pods of 15, which is deemed to be safe, but. We can go through any individual.
So 15 people, 15 teenagers, for example, can be in a pod, and four alphas can't walk around a golf course. Come on.
That is the public health advice, Pat, and we can go through any individual piece and say how come we can do this but not that? Like, how come I can't sit in my granny's garden, but I can go for a walk in the park with my granny? How can I go to a wedding?
How can I go to a wedding on Saturday with 24 others in a room drinking and eating, but I can't walk a golf course with two others in the open air, usually 20 or 30 yards apart?
Because weddings are hopefully a once in a lifetime thing that are a very special and unique occasion, and no single round of golf is that, right? So people can look at any of these and say, well, I can go to a wedding, but I can't play golf. I can walk down the street with my granny, but I can't sit in the garden with her. 17-year-olds are allowed train, but 19-year-olds are not allowed train. We can go through any of these things. So the only
but that's the point of my question. The point of my question is about precision. Rather than blanket this, blanket that, prohibition on everybody, why did you not be more, why were you not more forensic, more precise in looking at where the spreads are really likely and mandate their closure and allow everything else to proceed?
So that is what happened. And if you want to look at the level of detail that's gone into, your listeners can just go on to gov.ie and look at the essential services, look at the essential retail. This time it is much more forensic. So the easy response to all of these very reasonable questions around how come I can do X but I can't do Y would be, okay, look, I tell you what, just go home. We're shutting every single thing down like we did the last time. We're shutting down the hospitals. We're shutting down the schools. We're shutting down the colleges. No one can train. We're shutting down disability services. We're just going to shut everything down. And then everyone can say, okay, well, that's consistent because there's literally nothing allowed. What we're doing is saying, we've got to suppress the virus. We're moving to level 5, but there are some things which we believe need to stay open, like adult disability services, like hospitals, like sport, like training for sports for school-aged children, like the schools themselves. So the moment we begin to say, it's like the last time, except for the following things, people can say, yeah, but hang on, if you're allowing that, then allow this. Like, why not open the gyms? Why not open that? Why not have club championships? Because essentially what we're doing is saying, go home, stay within 5 kilometers
of your house. You don't have club championships because of the bad behavior that attached to them. So I'm saying, you know, where there's bad behavior, that's what you control. If there's, you know, by and large, good compliance, and our listeners are saying golf clubs would be a classic example of that, why penalize them for the non-compliance of others?
Well, so we start picking out individual sports and say you can do this, but you can't do that. You can play 9 holes, but you can't play 18 holes. You can go around in foursomes. No, you can go around in twosomes. Well, actually, you can't do that. You know what you can do? You can play the first 5 holes, but you have to go on your own. Like, that's just not the world we're in, Pat. We're in level 5. And the very clear message in level 5 is for the next 6 weeks, we have to go home. Now, we have made a few exceptions to that. For a variety of reasons, including mental health and physical health and essential services. We're keeping all of the schools open, all of the colleges open, manufacturing and construction open. Okay. So we've a choice. We can either accept that there are some things that we will keep open to facilitate the economy and health services and education and so forth, or we just close everything.
Okay.
I hope your listeners understand that. The right thing to do is a core message that says we need to stay at home, but we're keeping these essential services open. And golf, rightly or wrongly, is not being deemed to be an essential service.
Okay. Stephen Donnelly, Minister for Health, thank you very much.